Hi, welcome to BCI Cattle Chat. I'm Brad White, joined today by Bob Larson, Dustin Pendell, and we've got Philip Lancaster with us today. Good morning, guys.
Hey, good morning.
Morning, Brad.
Good morning, Brad.
So Philip is a nutritionist with the Beef Cattle Institute. We're happy to have him with us today because we have, and we really enjoy getting questions from listeners. And in fact, we've got a whole show today with questions that we've received from listeners on different topics. We're going to talk some about herd records. We're going to talk some about rotational grazing, talk a little bit about feeding calves at home. So we've asked Philip to join us because he's as I mentioned, a nutritionist. He's spent some time in several different areas of the country, including Oklahoma, Florida, Missouri, now Kansas. So welcome, Philip. We're glad to have you with us.
Thanks, Brad. I'm glad to be here.
Hey, it makes it a little bit easier because now we only have one Bob this week. And so we don't have two Bobs trying to keep track of who's who. We have Philip instead.
I know, well, you get two Bobs.
Like we haven't replaced Weber.
Exactly.
Well, at least we haven't for now. We'll see how Philip does.
That's right. Well, and two Bobs makes it confusing. Just like we're going to talk about herd records. My boys asked me the other day, and they said, why do we have two cows, or actually three cows, that were all numbered 602? They felt like that was maybe a confusing record system. So we're going to talk about records as we go through, but we went through and changed that. So, of course, as we were that fun process of changing tags and figuring out who's who. So we appreciate you guys joining today. And before we jump into those topics, I want to remind you, if you do have a question, a comment, something you want to send to us, please send us an email at bci@ksu.edu. We're always happy to hear from you. And I think, Gabby, you knew we were going to talk about records today, and so you might have some questions for the group.
I sure do. I found a couple record-keeping questions from the National Animal Health Monitoring System, 2017 data. So I have four questions to ask.
Excellent.
All right.
So first question, what percent of all operations use individual cow identification?
All right. So the way my brain works is, well, it's over half. At least in my experience, it's well over half. And, you know, more like 2/3. But in my experience, sometimes really small herds don't bother to ID. And also in my experience, sometimes really large herds, if they're managing extremely extensive range situations, they may not tag cows either. So I'm gonna go with my 2/3, like 65 to 70%, right in that ballpark.
Well, I guess my thought was, my experience is most of our cow herds are not very large, and so I think it's probably a little bit lower. I'm going to say about half, about 50%.
Okay, that's believable too.
So we're going to have to give this one to Bob, unfortunately. Philip, it is 80.4%.
See, that is a little higher than I would have guessed, but maybe, okay, I believe him. I'm just a little higher than I would have guessed.
All right, second question. What percent of herds with 200 or more head have individual cow identifications?
I think that's going to be higher than the overall average. So when we look at an operation level, if the other one was 80%, Gabby? So
yes.
I'm going to say 90%.
I agree with Brad. It's going to be larger. And the reason I think it's going to be larger is because if people are using this kind of as their full-time employment, they're probably going to maybe do a little better job records. Now, is it 90? I'm going to say it's probably a little less than that. I'm going to say 87.
So this one is 95%. So almost
wow.
All are using.
Wow. 95%.
That's a lot. So yeah. So almost everybody over with herd size of 200 or more head is using individual cow ID.
Yep. So now we're going to switch gears a little bit and talk about the calves. So what percent of all operations use individual IDs for their calves?
Okay. Well, and I'm not trusting my experience anymore now that I've been wrong a couple times here. I was going to say around 2/3. And I'm basing that on, well, I said 2/3 for the cows and I was a little low. And I would have guessed a little lower for individual calf ID. So I'm going to bump it up and say, I'm going to say my 2/3 now.
I think you're basing it on you guess two thirds for a lot of things.
Well, I do.
We have these questions, and you always say, "I think it's about two thirds."
That's actually what I tell the students too. If you absolutely have no idea, guess two thirds.
Guess two thirds or one third, depending on where you think it is.
So I'm going to say it's probably a little lower. We had 80% for all cows. I'm going to go with Philip's original answer of about 50%.
So we have 65.8% of all operations using calf IDs.
That's darn close to two thirds.
That's pretty close.
Hey, your two thirds paid off.
It did. So.
All right. So last question. What percent of herds with over 200 head use individual calf IDs?
All right. So if we had about 95% of the herds using individual cows, my guess is probably going to be a little lower on calves. Probably going to be somewhere around 80-85%.
You're right in where I was going to go, Philip. I'm going to go, if you said 85%, I'm going to play the Price is Right game, and I'm going to say 86.1.
So it's about 90%.
Oh, so does that mean we got a tie? Bob and Brad both have two correct answers?
Oh, there we go.
Oh, you got a tiebreaker question for us, Gabby?
I don't, so you'll just have to share the victory.
Oh, okay.
That's something both of us are super good at.
We could flip a coin.
Not competitive at all.
Not competitive at all. So, excellent. So one of the interesting things there, and there were some differences as between the bigger herds and some of the smaller herds, but even across the board, about 80% of people are IDing cows. Two-thirds, as Bob said, are doing calves. And a record system is more than just putting an ID in an animal. It's figuring out what you can do with that information, which is really the question that we got. And actually, Dustin received this one. So I'll paraphrase, and Dustin, you tell me if I didn't get this right. But it was really about, if I'm going to manage my records on my cow-calf herd, what are my top priorities? What are the things I need a record-keeping system to do? And I'm going to use the term record-keeping system broadly to describe both. This could be the actual software that I use. It could be paper. It could be a spreadsheet. But let's not get into details of which method. But what do I need that to do? What do you guys think are the top priorities for a record-keeping system in a cow-calf herd?
Well, one of the things, and I think Philip said it earlier before we were getting started, is one of the things that I really want in a cow-calf operation is like number of calves weaned per cow exposed, or pounds of calves weaned per cow exposed. That's a metric that I really, really need.
So tell me more about that, Bob. So, you said two things. You said number of calves weaned per cow exposed, or pounds of calves weaned per cow exposed.
Well, and the way I think about it a lot of times is, so the number of calves weaned or the pounds of calves weaned is my income potential. So that's income, and cows exposed would be my expenses. It's my cows, my winter feed, all of that kind of gets wrapped up in the expenses. So by having that, it kind of gives me an income over expenses rough estimate. You know, now it wouldn't please an accountant or somebody that really wanted to get down to the exact profitability of a ranch, but it starts that process. And number of calves weaned per cow exposed, first of all, that's a relatively easy number to get. If I do a good job with inventory, pounds is a little more accurate as far as, or value even, you know, so pounds time price is a little more accurate. And again, a little more accurate is good, but I get a lot of my benefit by even just knowing number calves weaned per cow exposed.
And you're saying cow exposed, so that's cows exposed to the bull during the previous breeding season that produced these calves.
Yeah, that's a good clarification.
Right. So a year and a few months ago in most cases, right, depending on when you measure that.
Which maybe that's the point, is I would like a good enough record keeping system to figure that out. Because if I'm weaning them, say, if this is a springborn herd and I'm weaning them in November, I'm saying the previous May, you know, like more than a year ago when those cows were exposed, that's what, you know, so it's a different calendar year even.
So Philip, what are your thoughts? What would be the main things that you would tell somebody to think about as priorities for that record keeping system?
Well, you got to have some way to manage inventory changes. You've got to keep track of how many cows were there when you put the bull in that previous year. And then you've got to know, okay, what cows were either brought into the herd between that time and when you weaned those calves, or how many cows left. Have you sold any cows in between there? And so you got to have a system that'll let you keep track of those changes.
Absolutely. And Dustin, I know you looked into this some from your perspective. What would be some of the key things you'd want to think about when putting in a herd record system?
Well, thinking about, Bob talked about herd information, specifically thinking about if you're going to sell some calves or sell some cows, pull cows. I'm going to say maybe the price, and it's primarily it's because thinking taxes later on, you're going to have to keep some of that information. But I think there's, thinking feed, thinking a lot of different individual records. If we went back to the question that Gabby asked earlier about individual cows being ID'd, if there are 80.4% of cows being ID'd, and two-thirds calves being ID'd, individually, there might be some opportunities there to capture a bunch of additional information, whether that's birth date, vaccinations, weaning weights, et cetera, all which then can be used or passed on to the next individual that maybe buys them. You'd be part of branded programs. Maybe you get all that information back, that carcass data. So there's a lot of, again, I know this is being a lot more broad than maybe what Bob and Philip discussed, but I think there's a lot of opportunities given so many animals are being individual ID'd.
So I like what you're saying is you kind of match it to the operation though, because it could influence their marketing program. It could mean that if you had individual IDs, you get more information. Sometimes group IDs might suffice to get you what you need, depending on how you're marketing your calves.
And every operation is going to be different, as we've said on multiple different podcasts. You know, you've got somebody doing that has 10 cows versus one that maybe has 1,000 cows. That's going to be a much different operation. And if you got one that's in, you know, somewhere up in the western part of the United States versus maybe the Midwest or Southeast, it's just going to be a lot different on what their operation, their needs are for their particular operation.
Well, and you want that record system to be able to track. We talked about on the cow-calf herd the importance of reproduction. Bob also mentioned right at the top performance with the weight of calves weaned. Are those kind of the key things you'd look for, or is there anything else that we need this system to do? Because it sounds pretty straightforward.
Well, it does. It depends a little bit on, again, I like what Dustin said. It depends on what the ranch needs and what they're doing. One of my things that I've kind of come to believe is cow-calf record-keeping systems can be a little more simple, don't have to be quite as sophisticated as, say, for a dairy or a swine operation or a feedlot. And it's because in those three things, a dairy, a swine operation, or a feedlot, you've got animals that are being bred every week. Well, not in a feedlot, but you've got reproduction taking place every week. You've got marketing taking place every week. And it's, you know, it's a continuous flow type of a thing. And in a cow-calf operation, you're usually talking about a few events, you know, so bull turnout time, preg check time, weaning time. And so it's not a every week the same records over and over and over again. It's a few times of a year, different things that I'm writing down. And the beauty of that is that maybe is a little less of a sophisticated record-keeping system than some of these more continuous flow types of livestock operations. But even still, it's what does that client need? Are they a seed stock or purebred producer? Are they commercial? Do they retain ownership on calves all the way through the feedlot or not? All of those things are going to influence about what's kind of the optimum record-keeping system for them.
I like what you're saying, because that means don't overcomplicate it, but match it to your operation. So you don't have to feel like this has to be really complex to get some valuable information out. And we want to get a record system that can measure calves or pounds weaned per cow exposed. And that leads us to our BCI Cattle Chat checklist, which are the top priorities for getting that cow-calf record system.
Number five, manage inventory changes. Be able to know when cattle enter and leave the herd.
Number four, measure reproductive success by percent pregnant or percent calving.
Number three, track the appropriate performance metrics for your operation.
Number two, develop a record system that matches your specific herd goals.
And number one, create relevant identification. So whether you're using tags or brands, have a system that is going to identify the individuals and groups that are important to you.
And that's our BCI Cattle Chat checklist for this week. Okay, our next listener question, and one that I think is a really good question, because we've talked a little bit about rotational grazing. We probably should address that a little bit more. But this question is really about, what are some of the problems that you see with it? And I know Bob and Philip, you guys both spent time in Missouri, and that's a state that does do some rotational grazing. There's lots of other states that do as well. And the question is really, what are some of those problems?
Well, Brad, you know, one of the things that you have to keep in mind with these systems is weather and climate variables affect how well your grass performs, and then you've got to be able to adjust to that. The growth rate of grass and forage is not consistent throughout the grazing season, and so one of the things you need to be able to do is be flexible. Your system, whatever kind of system you put in place, needs to be flexible. And so from my experience teaching students about it and talking with producers, and some of the best systems I've seen is where they have developed flexible fencing and flexible water so that they can adjust based on the conditions that they've got. The cost of that is it means a little more labor, because things aren't permanent. You don't just go open the gate and move the cows. You got to move the electric fence, and you got to move the portable water tank, and you know, things like that. So
yeah, I think one of the things that I learned, and I was at Missouri for a while in the state of Missouri, and there were some guys that really focused on research on rotational grazing, and one was Jim Garrish, and he used to always say it's not just rotational grazing, it's management intensive grazing. Meaning that, and it's like what Philip said, you're going to need to manage, because you're constantly watching the cows, constantly watching the grass, and you're not following a recipe, you're managing based on the situation that's, you know, the forage growth curve that you're seeing. And so if you don't, so the question was, well, how do you have problems? If you intensify your infrastructure, so you've spent a lot of money to build fences and develop water, but then you don't manage intensively, you're probably not going to recoup that investment.
I think that's one of the things that as you think about Philip's point, flexibility is key, right? You can't just say, I'm going to go move the cows Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and that's what I'm going to do every week for the next 8 weeks or 10 weeks or however long I'm going to do it. Because the weather changes, the grass changes. So I think that's one of the issues. One of the other challenges that we think about is, and you mentioned, both Bob and Philip, you guys mentioned it, some of the facilities, some of the infrastructure costs. I know, Dustin, you talked last week about fencing prices. Are there any other expenses we should be concerned about with rotational grazing or management intensive grazing?
Just the two big ones that come up for your initial ones would be the labor. And the investment costs, such as the fencing, obviously have water, as they pointed out, if you have to continue hauling water, it's just going to be a labor expense. So I think those are probably your two big things to keep in the back of your mind, is the fencing and the labor. One thing, as you guys were talking about this, one thing that popped in my head, are there any animal health issues that one might want to be concerned about if they're doing this? I don't know the answer. Yeah. I just wasn't sure.
I would say most of the time, not too much, but there's the potential. The potential is some positives. You know, if I'm really managing grazing better so that I'm optimizing body condition on the cows and are, eating, you know, vegetative grass, green growing grass, more days of the year. Those are all positive. A couple of interesting negatives is because of the life cycle of some of our parasites, both worms and flies, things like that. You know, they go through, they lay the eggs and they come back, you know, they hatch and those kinds of things. If I'm rotationally grazing and my cows, you know, in a few days, they deposit manure and that's where the internal parasites and fly eggs are going to be. And if I'm gone, there's no cattle there when those hatch and then they go through several days and they dry out before they could find another cow to get into. That actually helps my parasite control. But if, on the other hand, I'm back around to that same paddock right when those parasites hatch, I can actually amplify my parasite exposure. So rotational grazing can either be a positive or a negative on parasite load, depending on the situation.
Absolutely. And I think it's back to, as you, and I like how you described it earlier, Bob, as management intensive grazing. And as Philip said, flexibility. And back to the question, what are some of the problems? I think there have been times when the plan should be modified or changed and it wasn't. And that's where we will run into problems, is I'm just sticking with my plan. And sometimes the plan may need to be abandoned, right? I may need to have a backup plan. It's drier than I thought. I can't keep the grass ahead of the cows, or I can't keep the cows ahead of the grass. I need to have a plan to handle those issues. So we'll put some links in the show notes. I think we probably need to have a little bit more conversation, because management intensive grazing differs greatly around the country. Are we talking warm season grasses in big paddocks, or are we talking cool season grasses in small paddocks, and even cool season grasses? Very different in the spring and fall than they are midsummer, right? The length of rest period. So we'll come back to that as we go forward. Great, great question. Another question that ties in, and we talked a couple weeks ago about direct marketing of beef, and we talked about some of the things to consider. And if you want to go back, we actually did our Cattle Chat checklist on what are the things to consider if you're thinking about direct marketing of beef. But another way to go, and we've got some people, especially this year, that are considering, and we had a great question on, we normally sell our calves at weaning, but we're thinking about holding a few back and feeding some out. And their question was really nutritional related, and what are the considerations for feeding those calves? So Philip, I'm going to turn to you. And what do you think about if I haven't, and let me give you a scenario, I haven't fed calves before, but I'm thinking about keeping back a handful, not a whole pen. What are some of my considerations in feeding those guys?
Well, the first things you need to think about, just from a diet perspective, what type of feed ingredients do you have in your area that you can get? And maybe even a step before that, are you going to go to the local feed store and buy what they have available, or are you thinking about making your own custom blend or custom mix? And so some of the things that we need to think about if you're going to make your own custom mix is what feeds you got available, and get what energy sources do you have available. Corn obviously being the number one that we use for the most part, but a lot of good byproduct feeds are beneficial. So like distillers grains or soybean hulls, things like that, that are highly digestible fiber, and they help balance that rumen pH and help that animal digest feed better and not have potential bloat or acidosis issues. Another thing that you need to be aware of is that the vitamin and mineral premix that you probably use for your cows on pasture is not what you need for cattle on a grain diet. So you need to be able to find a vitamin and mineral premix that's formulated for cattle on a grain diet, because especially the calcium and phosphorus ratio in that vitamin and mineral mix needs to be different, with a lot more calcium in it, because the grain and the corn is going to have a lot more phosphorus in it. And so you've got to keep that balance in the total diet around 2-to-1 calcium to phosphorus.
So the big difference from even when we talk about, for sure, from feeding cows, but even when you talk about feeding weaned calves at the start versus finishing them, so some of our concerns are very different when you go into that finishing phase to really make that efficient. What about the economics of this, Dustin? Is this, you have any information there?
So, yeah, what I would just recommend, and again, I don't remember what, did you mention what state they're coming, calling, or
from? This particular caller was from Georgia.
Georgia. So what I would do is maybe go out to the university's website, at the University of Georgia, their extension website, and before you decide to do this, just try to pencil out. I know on agmanager.info, we've got enterprise budgets, not only for the cow-calf stocker, but also for your finishing out calves. Just so I would pencil out, see if it's going to be profitable to do this. The other thing I would consider is, again, another decision tool you could find on Ag Manager is looking at the risk management. So, you know, price risk as an example, one thing they might want to think about when they're thinking about this as well.
So, and depending on how many you're thinking about feeding, you may want to do some sort of risk management on them if it's a large enough group that makes sense. I think that's a great point. Bob, any health issues, concerns, things we'd think about on the health side?
Yeah, and Philip even talked about some of those that you can are concerned about from a nutritional standpoint, but bloat or acidosis, those types of things. And again, if you're not used to feeding higher grain rations to cattle, talk to your veterinarian, become aware of what kind of symptoms you might look for, and work with your nutritionist to develop it, because nutrition is going to drive a lot of some of those nutritional diseases that we think about in cattle that get a lot of concentrates. So if you're not used to it, just be aware that there's some things you need to kind of up your knowledge about.
Yeah, and watch the cattle. Right, they're going to tell you based on how they're eating, how they're behaving. That's going to be your key point, is watch the cattle, and you'll have a chance to watch them a little closer because you'll be feeding them every day in most scenarios.
Yeah, watch the cow. Good animal husbandry is some of the best medicine we've got.
Absolutely, and we will put some links in the show notes. Dustin mentioned Ag Manager Info. I think that's a great site. Lots of great tools there. There are also great extension sites where you can get some of those tools. I think one of the key takeaways there that I heard you guys say is have a plan, and that plan may need to be pretty specific and detailed related to the ration, but also related to the economic side before I just jump into it, because it's a relatively long time frame commitment. So appreciate Philip, appreciate having you join us today, and we've enjoyed having you with us as you've listened through. And again, we enjoy getting your questions. So if you have a question for us, please send us an email at bci@ksu.edu.